1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
You are listening to
In the Public Interest.
On KTSW.
San Marcos. San Marcos.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the fall semester of In the Public Interest. I am one of your hosts. My name is Megan Joe.
I'm Marissa Parks.
And I'm Josh Andrews.
And we are so excited about this semester. We have some great topics for you. The first one we are going to discuss is Pride in the LGBT community. And I know that LGBT stands for lesbians, gays, bisexual, and transgendered, but there's been some recent letters added to the acronym. What do they mean?
There sure have been some recent letters. You know, the full name of it now is actually LGBTQIA. And what they stand for, of course, everyone knows L for lesbian, G for gay, B for bisexual, T for transgender, Q for questioning, I for intersex, and A for asexual.
What's an intersexual?
And that's a good question. Intersex is when a person is born with anatomy that doesn't fit typical male or female definitions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of that before. I just didn't know it was referred to as that term. I looked up some stuff that relates to the LGBT community and some of the struggles they've had to go through and their history. And I've put some of that together. And so I'm going to go through this timeline. Starting in 1953, when President Dwight Eisenhower signs executive order, he bans homosexuals from working for the federal government or any of its private contractors. The order lists homosexuals as security risks, along with alcoholics and neurotics. In 1962, Illinois repealed its sodomy laws, becoming the first U.S. state to decriminalize homosexuality. And in 1969 were the Stonewall Riots. There were these riots in Greenwich Village at one of their gay bars there. The police would commonly come in, but one night these riots just erupted and they lasted like 3 days. And then the place shut down. It was declared a National Historic Landmark in 2000 and reopened in 2007. So if you're in Greenwich Village, you can stop by the Stonewall Inn. And then in December 1973, the Board of American Psychiatric Association votes to remove homosexuality from its list of mental illnesses. And in 1974, the first openly gay American was elected to public office when she won a seat on the Ann Arbor, Michigan City Council. On November 8, 1977, Harvey Milk won a seat on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors and was responsible for introducing a gay rights ordinance protecting gays and lesbians from being fired from their job. Sadly, just 1 year after he was elected, the former city supervisor, Dan White, assassinated Milk. And then in 1981, the New York Times printed the first story of a rare pneumonia and skin cancer found in 41 gay men in New York and California. This was the first case of AIDS in the U.S. And then in 1988, the World Health Organization organized the first World AIDS Day to raise awareness of the spreading pandemic. In 1993, the Department of Defense issued a directive prohibiting the U.S. military from barring applicants from service based on their sexual orientation. Quote, applicants shall not be asked or required to reveal whether they are homosexual, end quote, states new policy, which forbids applicants from engaging in homosexual acts or making a statement that he or she is a homosexual. This policy is known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But in 2010, the U.S. Senate repealed it by a 65-31 vote. And in September of 1996, President Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act, commonly referred to as DOMA, into law. The law defines marriage as a legal union between one man and one woman, and that no state is required to recognize a same-sex marriage from out of state. But in 2011, President Obama states that his administration will no longer defend DOMA. In 2000, Vermont became the first U.S. state to legalize civil unions and register partnerships between same-sex couples. And in 2003, Texas v. Lawrence, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that sodomy laws in the U.S. are unconstitutional. And in 2004, Massachusetts became the first state to legalize gay marriage.
Woohoo.
I know. The court found that the prohibition of gay marriage was unconstitutional because it denied dignity and equality of all individuals. So that was just, you know, some of the history, the timeline that's gone on. Some of the more recent stuff definitely has to deal with DOMA and other legislation. What do you have on that for us, Marissa?
So DOMA, like you said, the Defense of Marriage Act was brought back in 2013. Edith Windsor and Thea Speier moved to New York after being married in 2007 in Ontario, Canada. Unfortunately, in 2009, Speier died but left her estate to her spouse, as written in her will. However, the IRS didn't honor Windsor's claim on the estate. In February 2011, Attorney General Eric Holder helped Windsor fight for her right to inherit the estate. Them, as well as others, worked to repeal DOMA as unconstitutional due to the process guarantees of the Fifth Amendment. That very same day, California Proposition 8, Hollingsworth versus Perry, took place, where California's constitutional amendment ruled against banning same-sex marriage. Since the strike down of DOMA, 19 states have made same-sex marriage laws legal, from Connecticut to New Mexico. In 2013, same-sex marriage were also taken into the workplace. Though discriminating against not hiring an applicant based on their sexual orientation is against the equal employment opportunity, harassment in the workplace towards the LGBT community still exists. In April 2013, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, also known as EDNA, was brought to Congress to protect those who are in the LGBT community that were discriminated, harassed, bullied, or fired due to their orientation. This bill was approved by the Senate in November 7, 2013, on a bipartisan vote. This is just a brief history of the improvements of the rights that the LGBT community has endeavored. So, Josh, what's been going on now?
Well, you know, before we start talking about current events, it's really important to look at where we are now as far as a nation. You know, currently there are 19 states that have legalized same-sex marriage. You know, looking back at that, it's really crazy to think that, you know, just in 2008, there were only two. Some of the most recent states to pass same-sex marriage is Pennsylvania, Oregon, and Hawaii. Now, bans on the remaining states are being struck down by federal judges at a rapid rate, you know, which makes people wonder and think, you know, is you know, the universal or, like, nationwide law coming that's going to just accept or legalize gay marriage as a whole. And some of the more specific current events that I have, and more recently, as of February 2014, a federal judge in San Antonio, that's right here, ladies and gentlemen, issued an injunction barring Texas from enforcing a law that prohibits same-sex marriage in state. The Supreme Court took action in August when Virginia was on the verge of legalizing gay marriage. Apparently, days from the proposed legalization date, the Supreme Court struck down the legalization as unconstitutional.
That was a good little recap. And it's amazing to see, you know, how far we've come. And I think that can really be attributed to people in this community coming together and really fighting for their rights, as we talked about in their timeline and obviously through a lot of this legislation. And a huge part of that is, you know, having events like Pride and different things to celebrate that. And we recently had San Marcos, Texas Pride. It was September 5th, 6th, and 7th. And Josh actually went out and interviewed their coordinator, Sylvia. Tell us about that interview, Josh.
Well, you know, one of the first exciting things to say about this festival or this Pride event is the fact that it was the first one San Marcos has ever had. I was able to interview Sylvia Sandoval, who is actually the coordinator for the event. She was the one that really went out of her way, did all the behind-the-scenes work, and really pulled things and strings together to make this event come together. Right, so I have my interview here with her. I'm going to play it for you guys.
Though Texas is slow to accept same-sex marriage, Sylvia Sandoval has made it known that San Marcos is no stranger to loving everyone. Sandoval recently finished coordinating San Marcos' first Pride event on the weekend of September 5th through 8th and was able to share details of her experience in a one-on-one interview.
Being that San Marcos had its first Pride event this past week, you were the one setting it all up. What were your goals with the event, you know, before and going into it?
I've always been the behind-the-scenes person.
Okay.
I'm the one that coordinates it, creates it, figures it out. I really don't set too many high-standard goals. My goal was, well, my friends show up, I'd be happy. I expected about 20, 30 people, give or take. I didn't expect a huge outcome because some of the events I've thrown, you know, have positive, huge, you know, outbursts of people show up, and sometimes right. I have 5-10.
So as far as your goals, did you get to meet all of your goals that you had set? Your turnout and the amount of people that showed up?
Yes, because the Arts Commission helped me launch this year.
Oh, awesome.
The San Marcos Arts Commission. They have some requirements I had to meet, and one of them was to get surveys and get ideas of tourists and how many people came in and traveled. I got to get over 400 surveys done.
Wow.
So that exceeded my expectations.
That's impressive.
I would have been happy with 100.
With the event, what were some of the struggles and things that you ran into along the way? You know, if you have any stories of, oh, this didn't quite go as planned.
Well,
but
our original lineup for the drag shows, I wanted to have a drag show every night because that is a part of what we are standing for. That's our expression of who we are.
Right.
So our original lineup was set up to have a different coordinator to take care of that. At the last minute, coordinator didn't have the same mission statement in mind and decided to leave with the whole act.
Wow.
So we had to, 2 weeks before the launch, we had to restructure it all, start from scratch, and literally do it all over again.
All over, and you managed to pull it off still, didn't you?
Like, it didn't happen, yeah.
That's awesome. You know, now that the event is over, how successful do you think it was?
Extremely. For it being our first, over 300 people in a parade, we packed venues like I've never seen in the past.
This took place in the square, right?
Right, in the square. It took in 3 different spots.
Okay.
We did 3 different events, 3 different times. It was 3 different. We merged my original baby, which is Rainbow Night. Then we, you know, brought in San Marcos Pride. And then we did the last See You Next Year.
Tell me more about the Rainbow Night. What is that?
Rainbow Night was created in 2010,
okay.
Back in March. A friend of mine got a little harassed in one of the bars we were in. And she's like, San Marcos doesn't have anywhere for us to go. We need something. So I said, all right, let me see what I can come up with. I went door knocking to all the bars, found one that said, yeah, go ahead, have your one night. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you going to call it? I was like, Rainbow Night? He goes, why Rainbow Night? Is it going to be just gay people coming in and out? I was like, no, I want everyone under the rainbow. And he opened the doors and he let me have it at Gold Crown for a few months.
Wow.
And we kept that going. We've still been working with Rainbow Night since 2010. It's now once a month at a different venue. We have it at Full Moon Saloon. Mm-hmm. Soon, with Stonewall opening up, we're going to move it to every first Saturday.
How rewarding was your experience in all this?
Oh, the experience itself was, you can't go to school to get this kind of education. I mean, you have to literally get in the dirt and figure out how it works. I mean, working with the city, working with different, just totally different view from going to a bar. You have to literally start from scratch, gain insurance, finding out what we can and cannot do. We have to meet all, everything everybody requests just to have one thing for us. It's very
good. Yeah, I'm sure you managed to make a lot of connections through this type of thing.
So a lot.
You're expecting this to grow in the future, right? What kind of things or what are your goals for the future of San Marcos Pride?
I want to move it tonight.
Tonight?
I want to do the night parade, everything.
Similar to what they do in Houston?
Yes.
Okay.
We're merging forces like the Power Rangers.
Okay.
Everybody from the university that's in the LGBT community groups, we're going to bring them both together during the next Pride. And it's going to be a little bit of everything, and it's going to be a big monster for everybody to enjoy. Because when you join everybody from the university and everybody from San Marcos, the expectations are totally different.
You know, the amazing thing about this is San Marcos is fastest growing city in America right now. So there's a lot of things that you can set up for the upcoming year, you know. A year from now doesn't seem like a long time, but, you know, in a city like this where everything's growing so fast, you really do have a lot of opportunity to expand.
Exactly.
Sandoval continues to build support in the San Marcos area for everyone and is excited to welcome the community to the opening of Stonewall Warehouse, the city's first LGBT bar opening in mid-October. There, she plans to host events that offer unique opportunities for the LGBT community, including Rainbow Nights on the first Saturday of each month. Sandoval is also already hard at work planning San Marcos' next Pride event, scheduled for September of 2015. She hopes to see the community involvement grow and for the event to inspire more events like it.
That was a great interview and a great story. Thank you so much, Josh.
No problem. I really had a blast putting it together, so.
And there's a lot that goes into Pride, and my favorite part is definitely the drag shows.
Oh, definitely. They were so much fun to watch and so much fun to see the community interact with people who have never seen drag shows before. And I actually have some information on how drag got started. The drag scene actually dates back to ancient Roman era. People believed that cross-dressing was to be special because they could see things from both point of views. Even William Shakespeare touches on cross-dressing in his play, As You Like It. The first notable case in the U.S. were throughout the 1960s at Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village, as Meg mentioned earlier. The poverty neighborhood that catered to the LGBT community, especially the transgender and drag scene. A riot between heterosexual and drag, as well as the police and club attendants, broke out on June 8, 1969, and lasted for 3 days. Luckily, two gay right activist groups were able to stop the riots and brought attention to the issue. Since then, the drag scene took off throughout the 1970s and throughout the 1980s, with musical shows such as Pink Flamingo, Rocky Horror Picture Show, Tootsie, and Hairspray. The 1990s brought more commonly known and commercial movies such as Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams, rest in peace, The Nutty Professor, White Chicks, and Big Mama. As the drag scene has become more popular, artists such as Lady Gaga, Cyndi Lauper, Kesha, Diana Ross, Lou Reed, RuPaul, Aerosmith, and others have brought awareness to the art of drag. From being praised upon in ancient Rome to being discriminated against in the 1960s America, social reception of drag has obviously changed. Many drag queens are now looked down upon, but society, especially through media, is now telling queens to be comfortable with who you are. During Pride, that was definitely my favorite part.
You know, the drag scene has come a long way. I know I saw that film, Paris is Burning. Have you guys seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw it on Netflix.
You know, actually, I want to go ahead and highlight a little more about Paris is Burning. For those of you that don't know what it is, it's actually a documentary. Came out in 1990. At least it came out in 1990. It's about the 1980s in Harlem, New York. The reason it was so important and renowned is because it was the first ever documentary focusing on drag culture and its endeavors in the 1980s. You know, since then, the documentary has actually won a lot of awards and received heavy recognition, since it explores how drag queens dealt with the adversity of racism, homophobia, AIDS, and poverty. And drag as a culture is actually presented as a complex performance of gender, class, race, you know, in which one can express one's identity, desires, and aspirations along many dimensions. You know, it's actually something I would recommend our listeners to go watch. It's, you know, I was able to watch it on Netflix, and I'm sure you can find it anywhere else. But definitely get a chance if you do to watch that movie. It's very, very influential.
Yeah, it's a great watch, and it really puts a different image in my head of kind of the struggle that people had to go through during that era. And we have Allie this week. She's talking to some of the queens that were involved in putting the drag shows on during San Marcos, Texas Pride.
San Marcos chose to partake in LGBT Pride this year for the very first time, from September 5th to 7th, which included dances, parades, and drag queen shows to help celebrate the LGBT community in San Marcos. The VFW played host to one of the drag queen shows during Pride, and the performers were talented in so many ways. All the drag queens were dressed over the top from head to toe, but they were not just there for show. They were there to share their story and share who they are with Pride. Jackie Mackey, a queen originally from North Michigan, shared how she moved to the area to be with her boyfriend a little over 3 years ago. Although Jackie was unsure about moving to Texas, a known conservative state, she found a community in the Austin and San Marcos area to help her transition.
Hey, I love Austin. It's like a little bubble of not the rest of Texas.
Jackie Mackey will only dress in drag every now and then, but she adores dressing up and strutting down 4th Street in Austin, where she feels most comfortable being who she is. Madeline Monroe Kennedy came to San Marcos for school, but decided it wasn't for her anymore. She chose to stay in the area to make a name for herself.
Stuck around town because it's been a great place for personal development and growth.
Madeline does makeup for a glam rock band, Chaska, and performs at Triple Crown every other week for San Marcos Game Night. She believes San Marcos is a great place for performance opportunities for any type of talent, and she enjoys the small town vibe San Marcos gives off. Cynthia Lee Fontaine has been part of the LGBT community since 1999. She was originally from Puerto Rico, where she worked with several community service organizations, including organizations related to AIDS and HIV. Cynthia Lee moved to Texas and works as a peer supportive specialist social worker. She feels like she has a continuous commitment to help the community because she feels strongly for a community to be bonded.
And I believe if we start with that, especially unity and solidarity, we have a place to go, a safe place for the future generations.
Coming from a traditional Hispanic background, it was difficult for Cynthia Lee to become who she wanted to be, and she understands that it can be difficult for so many other people to do the same. Cynthia Lee believes it is a necessity to engage in the community and to engage in yourself.
Acceptance, like outcome as a homosexual, and I believe that is very powerful. So that's why I just support all my LGBTQ communities here. And I think San Marcos is a strong one, and it's going to be a bigger one in the future. I know.
Each of the drag queens I spoke to that night had their own story, each one more different than the last. However, all of them wanted to share their stories to bring attention to their lifestyle and to the LGBT community as a whole. They make it seem like it's all fun and games, but these glamour queens continue to strive for the same thing, equality.
The LGBT community has definitely had to overcome some great struggles, and one of those, most notably, is definitely the AIDS epidemic. A little bit about that. AIDS first appeared in 1981 in New York and California when 41 gay males were diagnosed with pneumonia and cancer. It is believed that the actual origin of AIDS was somewhere in Africa, but it's not really known. And when it first came to light, it was referred to as GRID, gay-related immune deficiency. It was also referred to as gay cancer and gay compromise syndrome. It wasn't until 1982 that it was changed to acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. At that time, there were 1 to 2 new cases reported every day. This disease was absolutely devastating to the LGBT communities in San Francisco and New York City. One man reported that 50 of his friends or people that he knew had actually died by 1983 from AIDS, and that was only 2 years after the first cases were reported. So, you know, nowadays we think about AIDS and it's a lot less, well, HIV is a lot less deadly than it once was. But back then, people were dying and it did not take long for this to kill them. Between the years of 2008 to 2010, according to the CDC, there was a 20% increase in HIV among the young gay and bisexual male population. And sadly, as many as 34% of people with HIV don't actually know they have it. Today, 1.1 million people in the U.S. are living with HIV. And according to the official AIDS journal, when those with HIV stick to their strict drug regimen, they actually aren't at a significantly increased risk of death compared to the rest of the population. And so I think that just goes to show, like, you know, get tested, know your status, remain informed, and, you know, be proactive about it.
That was very informative, and there are a lot of resources here on campus that are available to the LGBT community, as well as not just on campus, but being in San Marcos as well. And our news reporter, Bethany, has more on that.
The city of San Marcos celebrated their first annual Gay Pride Weekend September 5th and 6th. Students and local residents of San Marcos got to enjoy activities as well as a parade to support the LGBTQIA community of Texas State and the San Marcos community. Texas State as a university makes it available for students to get involved with organizations like Bobcat Pride, which supports LGBTQIA individuals on campus. I had the privilege of talking to President and Founder Brianna Penny in order to get a gain of perspective of what the organization does to support our Bobcats.
Bobcat Pride. Pride stands for People Respecting Individuality, Diversity, and Equality. The organization was founded this January. So we're pretty new to campus, and so getting our name out there is definitely, like, there's some confusion around that. We're an LGBTQIA mentorship and service organization. So we provide mentors to incoming freshmen, allied mentors, specifically to meet LGBTQIA students' needs. We also try to participate in community service off campus, and we have educational meetings every other Tuesday.
I asked Penny about membership of this new organization on campus, and what are they expecting for this coming year?
First meeting last semester, we had like 50 people come, and then after that, we had a pretty steady group of about 20 to 25. Mm-hmm. This semester, our first big meeting, like we had a kind of a returner, like officer kind of meeting, but our first meeting is Tuesday, September 16th, and so we're expecting quite a few people for that. We had a lot of interest at the student involvement fair, And so we're planning on getting a lot more people since we're starting at the beginning of the semester now instead of halfway through the school year.
Not only for incoming freshmen, but upperclassmen looking for support or to support students in an organization on campus. Freshmen and upperclassmen not only get to get involved, but become comfortable with each other in their college experience. Having a university that supports all students is something that, as Bobcat Pride does, we should all be grateful for. Some students might even be scared to come out and look for groups that are supportive.
And that's why we provide the mentorship, is because we want that someone to like help them through that stuff and help them find the resources on campus and the community and respect they deserve.
Bobcat Pride is expecting to support not only freshmen, but also upperclassmen at Texas State.
It's a mixture. We have a lot of upperclassmen mentors, and we have some upperclassmen transfer students, sophomores that are mentees as well. We're open to a mixture of whoever. We do try to focus a lot of our efforts on the incoming freshmen because we feel that they're some of the people that need that environment the most. They need a safe place when they get to Texas State the most. That a lot of them come from just a lot of different backgrounds, and that tends to be the time where people start accepting their sexuality, start questioning things more, and they aren't set in the box that they were in high school. So that tends to be what our focus is, but we have a wide variety of ages.
Bobcat Pride is a great way for students who are interested in getting mentored or being a mentee for Bobcats that need support. For more information on how to get involved on Texas State with organizations like Pride and Lambda, check out Texas State Student Organization in the LBJ Center to get more information.
Well, you know, it's certainly great to see that we have all these resources on campus, both on and off campus, available to people of the LGBTQIA community.
I'm just so grateful to live in a period where I can identify myself however I want and, you know, I'm not looked down upon. There are many countries where homosexuality is actually punishable by death. And I'm just grateful to live in a place where slowly but surely we're going to get there. I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. We've come a long way from where we have been. Obviously stating even just 50 years ago in the 1960s where you were seen to be as someone who had a mental disease if you were homosexual.
And it's amazing to see how far we've come. You know, the even more impressive part is the fact that we get to watch this all unfold in front of us. And we're part of this generation that gets to watch this happen. And, the world is going to start accepting this kind of thing. So
we can all hope, right?
We can all hope.
Definitely excited for the future to see what it holds.
And that's going to actually sum it up for your first In the Public Interest of the fall 2014 semester. But next week we will be back. And what are we going to be discussing?
Euthanasia.
That's euthanasia. And if you have any questions or, you know, any ideas for a story, anything like that, you can hit up our Facebook page.
That's www.facebook.com/KTSW In the Public Interest.
Tune in next Sunday for our next segment of In the Public Interest.